As the door swings open, my arm and body go with it, and I'm unexpectedly flung over at the waist, feet still planted, every muscle in my outstretched arm quivering from the burden of posing in this awkward position. Staring down at the floor and clinging onto the handle for dear life, I gather my strength and wits and try to rock myself upright. But I overestimate the reverse force needed, and I end up leaning too far backward, and I slam the door shut. I try again and do the exact same thing. I try again and again. I weeble out and wobble back, and each time I weeble out, I catch a teasing glimpse of the silver Diet Coke cans sitting on the top shelf. Then I wobble back, the door suctions shut, and they're gone. Sweating and panting, I decide to give myself a minute to catch my breath. Despite the seriousness with which I'm taking this quest, a tickled laugh bubbles out. For God's sake, I've become Laverne DeFazio. Okay, Sarah, come on. There's got to be a way in. This time as I pull, I sneak a quick step and drag forward. This keeps me from weebling out, but now I'm pinned between the door I'm still holding on to and the shelves inside the refrigerator. Not ideal, but it's progress. I'm face to face with 5 cans of Diet Coke. Because of the way I'm standing, I'm not sure that I can let go of the door handle with my right hand and not go crashing to the ground. With no one else home, I don't want to risk it. So it's my left hand or bust. The refrigerator shelf edges are chilly and pressing into my left shoulder, elbow, and wrist, which is uncomfortable but also fortunate because the sensory stimulation makes me aware of the existence of my left arm and hand. But when I send my cold left hand the message, "Dear left hand, please reach up and grab a Diet Coke," it won't budge. It's wedged up against the shelf. I try to free it by easing up a touch on the tension of my pull on the door handle, but as I do, I start to weeble out. I tense up and snap back. I think and come up with nothing. I'm stuck in the fridge. Good going, Laverne. You're really in a pickle now. I stare at the Diet Coke cans, inches from my nose, so close and yet so far away. As I try to come up with a plan to either get a Coke or get out of the fridge, or both, really, I happen to notice a bag behind the cans. It's the bag of coffee beans. We did remember to bring it. How on earth did Bob not see it in here? This drives me absolutely crazy. Bob's never been good at finding what he's looking for in the fridge. A typical example, and I'm always in another room of the house when he does this. Sarah, do we have any ketchup? On the top shelf. I don't see it. Next to the mayonnaise. I don't see any mayonnaise. Check the door. It's not in the door. Touch everything. I'll eventually hear the refrigerator alarm beeping, announcing that the door has been left open for too long, and decide it's time to rescue him. I'll walk over to the fridge where he's still searching, look at the top shelf for 1 second, reach in, grab the ketchup, which was next to the mayonnaise, and hand it to him. It's like he has refrigerator neglect. With what he's put me through this morning, he should have to go to some kind of rehabilitation program. After I'm done imagining the lecture and taunting I'll subject Bob to when he gets home, I grin, thrilled and proud of myself. I found the bag of coffee beans. I get to use the impressa. Yeah, but you're a 37-year-old woman stuck in a refrigerator. Shush. I have a renewed sense of determination. This mission now isn't for some crummy, cold can of Diet Coke. It's for the holy grail of caffeine, a hot, fresh-brewed latte. Time to step it up, Sarah. Come on. You went to Harvard Business School. Solve the problem. I lean my head forward and aim to knock over the cans I no longer care about, like my head is a bowling ball and the cans are pins. I knock them all down in 2 tries, a respectable spare. Then I stick my neck out as far as it will stretch, and I bite the rolled top of the coffee bag with my teeth. Gotcha. Now to get out. I decide that I've got to walk backward. This sounds simple, but I have no confidence that it will be. I haven't walked backwards since before my accident. I guess backward walking isn't something the occupational and physical therapists at Baldwin foresee as a necessary skill. Clearly, they didn't foresee one of their patients stuck in a refrigerator biting onto a bag of coffee beans. I'll have to tell Heidi that they should add it to their regimen. Here I go. I take a step backward with my right foot. But before I can even think about what to do next, my backward momentum sends me into an outward weeble. The door swings open too fast, and the force rips my hand off the handle. I fall backward and bang the back of my head on the tile floor. I've wiped out so many times now, falling doesn't even really faze me. The pain, the bumps, the bruises, the indignity, I've learned to take them all on the chin, literally and figuratively. It's all part of the delightful everyday experience that is having left neglect, so it's not the fall itself that makes me cry. I'm crying because I opened my mouth on the way down and dropped the bag, and it opened when it hit the ground, spilling my precious coffee beans all over the floor. I'm crying because I can't walk a few horizontal feet to the refrigerator and get a Diet Coke. I'm crying because I can't drive to B and C's myself. I'm crying because I wish I were skiing with Bob. I'm crying because I'm now sprawled out on the floor until someone rescues me. While I indulge in my pity party on the floor, I've forgotten that Linus is napping, and my pathetic wailing wakes him up. He wails along with me. "I'm sorry, baby," I yell up to the second floor. "Don't cry. Everything's okay. Grandma will be home soon." But the sound of his mother's voice faking reassurance from another floor isn't what Linus wants. He wants his mother. He wants his mother to walk upstairs and pick him up. And I can't. I cry. "Oh my God, what happened?" says my mother's voice. "I'm okay," I sob. "Are you hurt?" She's standing over me now, a styrofoam cup in her hand. "No, go get Linus. I'm fine." "He can wait a minute. What happened?" "I tried to get coffee." "I got your coffee. Why didn't you wait for me? You took too long." "Oh, Sarah, you're always so impatient," she says. "Let's get you up." She pulls me by my arms to a sitting position, wipes a spot on the floor next to me clear of beans, and sits down. She hands me the cup of coffee. "This isn't from B&C's," I say, noticing no label on the cup. "B&C's is closed." "On a Saturday?" "For good. The place is empty and there's a for lease sign in the window." "Where is this from?" I ask. "The gas station." I take a sip. "It's terrible." I resume crying. "I want to be able to get my own cup of coffee," I whimper. I know you do." "I don't want to be helpless," I say. My crying intensifies as soon as I hear myself say the word helpless. "You're not helpless. You need some help. They're not the same. Here, let me help you all the way up." "Why? Why are you helping me?" "Because you need it." "Why you? Why now? Why would you want to help me now?" She takes the coffee cup from my hand and replaces it with her hand. She squeezes and looks me in the eye with a steady resolve I've never seen in her before. "Because I want to be in your life again. I want to be your mother. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you when you were growing up. I know I wasn't a mother to you then. I want you to forgive me and let me help you now." "Absolutely no way. She had her chance and she abandoned you. What about all those years you needed her? Where was she then? She's too selfish, too self-absorbed. She's too late. You can't trust her. She had her chance." "Shush,"